Hello and welcome to another episode of Corks Talks, where I talk about all the topics of interest to me, and that ranges from political, social, economic, technological, legal, environmental, interpersonal, academic, cultural, you name it, I'll probably speak about it. And today, I guess, is a mixed episode. It's not really got like a particular train of thought. I thought I would just express myself and see what comes to play. I hope everyone listening to this has had a good week or weekend. The Easter holiday that is coming to an end is making me reflect on a bunch of new things. If you are celebrating Ramadan, then Ramadan Mubarak, and I hope that you are having pleasant fasts and that you are looking forward to Eid. I feel like we're in a stage of renewal, perhaps with spring. The weather looks very beautiful. I went for a walk on Sunday. That was really enjoyable. It was a walk that I hadn't gone on for a while because I had a blister on my foot because I'd walked so many miles Easter Monday, and it just healed up. I haven't really found the motivation to be walking every day though, which is really unhealthy, I know. So I need to get back out, but just been so exhausted that my mind is just running a mile a minute. And I've been thinking a lot about things like, I guess, neurodiversity and how the brain works and how I've had to accept how my mind works. Sometimes it gets extremely overactive and I'm like having to do 20 things in a moment. And sometimes it gets extremely slow where I can't do anything for like 2 weeks. And it's something that I'm constantly oscillating between. And I'm like, I need to see a medical professional, but right now I can't. Because obviously pandemic, but I know soon enough I'll be able to, and I need to make it a priority because I'm just all over the place. And actually maybe that's the train of this episode, because I know there was an article about people essentially medicalizing or diagnosing themselves with conditions because they don't have the access through traditional means of a medical professional. And that's due to a lot of things, which I touched on, I believe, in a previous episode when I spoke about things like sickle cell, you know, lack of research and understanding of, I guess, learning disorders or mental disorders or mental illnesses in particularly Black people, because I think so much of what we consider to be normal behaviour is classified by norms that are influenced by race and culture and religion and so on and so forth. So when you are trying to essentially diagnose somebody, you have to evaluate those themes and look at that before stating that somebody has this condition. And of course, we know that there is stigma on mental conditions anyway, but our idea of what should be normal is definitely up for debate, you know. I remember growing up, and I think I had for the first time the word ADHD in actually like a Black TV show. It was probably on that channel Trouble. It was the boy from Daddy Daycare, I think, the son, like Eddie Murphy's son, I believe it was him. He was playing a role and they had diagnosed him with ADHD, and at the time it was seen as a disorder for young children who basically couldn't sit still in classrooms, hyperactivity disorder. And I remember even seeing it and saying, oh wow, like this boy, in the role that he was playing, it was like he was smart but he couldn't focus or concentrate. And I remember even asking my dad that perhaps my brother had it because he wasn't concentrating in class. And it just kind of went away, and then it came up again and I was watching like an interview with this guy. I know that he's very problematic, but Dr. Umar Johnson, I don't actually know whether he's actually a legitimate doctor, but the point is he was talking about this condition, and he kind of extended on the theme that was shown in that episode, where he was like, you know, it's a disorder that basically is diagnosed to people who don't fit the traditional means of education, which is they can't sit still for a long time. And it's usually apparently overdiagnosed amongst Black boys that are very young. And it made me realize that, of course, so much of our bias towards what is normal is racialized and it is gendered and it is classed. And I, as a Black woman, going to a white therapist or a white doctor, or white health professional, psychologist, psychiatrist, trying to get them to diagnose me with a condition, it's never really going to be clear cut, you know, because their version of normal might not be my version of normal. Obviously, there are deviations that are extreme and there are deviations that are not too extreme, but it's so crazy how we haven't got like a intersectional look at this, when arguably, considering how mental health is becoming a huge conversation, this should be the focal topic on, you know, the idea of who we are as people, you know. So I'm always watching, I'm always learning more about who we were essentially pre-colonially, because I know that's always up for debate, in the sense that it doesn't mean it's perfect. Just because it was before colonialism doesn't mean that what Africans were doing was perfect. It's definitely still something we can criticize, but it's a more communal version of living, right? We all know that. And perhaps there were expectations there that were different to the means of expectations that we see today. You know, of course, these devices that we use, whether it's laptops and phones and the whole working from home scenario, is something that could not have been done 100 years ago in pretty much any industry, because how could you work from home? And then obviously understanding the gender roles of women, being domestic and being childbearing, and still understanding that even in the context of these expectations, women were still being diagnosed with conditions like hysteria, you know? And we know that there are phrases for what women experience due to their gender roles, you know? Whether it's postnatal depression after a baby being born, or just clinical depression as a result of an unhappy marriage. We have language for that. But it's just surprising how we don't admit like where these conditions originate, if they are acquired and not just genetic. You know, we always talk about generational trauma, but let's just put that aside for one moment and say, let's say these are acquired. Why don't we investigate what these triggers are and essentially reshape a world that can be adjusted towards these people that are suffering from these conditions, so that the conditions will decrease in frequency? That would seem like the logical response, right? When there is a negative trigger, we try to either undermine or limit the trigger to essentially solve the problem. But I guess because we're going from an ends approach, so instead of looking at the root, we are looking at the end of it. That's probably why we're not able to reshape the world. You know, there was that documentary that is quite popular called like The Silent Twins, and it's about these two black Caribbean girls, twins, who moved to England and moved to Wales, and they had all of these conditions essentially that came about as a result of well, that's the question, what is it a result of? And I think people are afraid to admit that the conditions that they experienced, which was like selective mutism and what some people characterize as like extreme anxiety, was likely as a result of their race and gender in such a white dominated space. But people wanted to just label them as strange, you know. It was an extreme example, because they were highly dependent on one another. They would mirror each other's actions and not speak, and people would say that they were speaking in their own language, meanwhile they were actually speaking English, which is very fast, and with an accent. It's this idea of never being understood by the world you're in, and of course that's an extreme example, but we don't seem to evaluate people's surroundings when we are making these diagnoses. And as for the whole generational and genetic relation to these conditions, that's a whole other story, because that requires an understanding of chemistries and mutations. And that is a biological understanding that I haven't even touched yet, just because I feel like I'm just trying to get past the social part. But of course, we cannot ignore the biological component. These are all related. That's the idea of psychology. It's not just about, you know, one isolated case. You have to understand that these things are underlined by often, yeah, biological and genetic components. And without getting too much into that literature, we know that, for example, Black Caribbean people are more likely to be diagnosed with schizophrenia in the UK. And we know that there is an overrepresentation of young women being diagnosed with BPD, which is borderline personality disorder. And also there is a lack of diagnosis of young girls in conditions like autism. And it's just going to show us how gendered these conditions are, whereby when you don't fit, I guess, what is called a model or archetype of what your gender should behave like, you're quick to get a diagnosis of something. And truth be told, it doesn't go on to appreciate, firstly, the breadth of human nature and behaviour. I don't think we understand deviation that well. In binging a bunch of true crime series on YouTube, I have seen that most of these killers are seen to have some kind of mental disorder before committing these crimes, and it's usually something like schizophrenia, or like an explosive disorder, some kind of condition that basically legitimizes mania, you know. And the stigma towards these conditions is obviously meaning that people are either going untreated or are not being treated properly to arguably perpetuate these killings going on. You know, it's a failure of our health system that doesn't appropriately treat these people that have these conditions. And that's, I think, a big part of the problem. Of course, there's just a stigma of mental illness in general, but the fact that people try to essentially legitimize it with these mental disorders is a huge problem, considering how common mental health disorders are becoming in our generation. Associating it with violence or something to fear is, of course, not only going to add stigma, but it's probably going to lead to more criminalization and legislation, as opposed to, you know, more appropriate methods of treatment, which are therapies and medicalization, but not over medicalization, because we obviously hear in terms of how Black people in particular are treated in mental health hospitals, that there is a fear associated with our behavior that often leads us to being medicalized in a way that our white counterparts aren't. And it gets worrying, you know. And it's something that people, again, don't want to admit, because it's a stigma. Everyone wants to be seen as normal. But growing up, I don't think there's anything normal about being like the only Black person in your class in a tiny island in European waters as a African or Asian descended female. There's nothing normal about that. How are you going to respond normally to it? You know, so finding out that a lot of trauma people face is like race-based or racism, or as a result of cultural mismatching, is inevitable. It's just the extent to which it manifests into a disease that is either undiagnosed, not well controlled, and then unfortunately leads to very dire circumstances. You know, that's all I'm observing. And of course, I think there's an added fear of things like personality disorders, just because personality is probably one of the first components of self that we are introduced to when we are young, where people will say, like, I like your personality, much like I like your looks, you know, or I don't like your personality. You know, it's something that's discernible. I feel like some of the conditions that we are talking about, i.e. things like ADHD and autism, are more related, unfortunately, to people's career or education, because there's this requirement for order in both of these conditions that only comes about when people are basically sent to school or sent to work with either 9 to 3 or 9 to 5, and that structure either affects them negatively or positively when they go out into the working world or go out into education. Whereas other conditions that relate to personality are maybe more unpredictable because you don't know people's entire personality ever, in my opinion. And I mean, I wouldn't even say until they're older, because you never really know the breadth of someone's personality. But it's this idea of like it's something that is going to affect you forever and always, even though ADHD and autism also do that. For some reason, I guess these are seen as educational diseases or career-related diseases, even though they are literally just all around year-long diseases, all these conditions. I don't even want to call them diseases. I shouldn't even do that. I should probably just call them conditions. But see, the idea that it's the idea that these conditions manifest more when you're in structured environments, as personality can basically manifest at any point at any time. So it's that unpredictable nature again, that fear that we see. And in order to have honest conversations, there needs to be cross-sectional analysis between like people who are of color, black people in particular, being related to white control groups in terms of behavioral norms, and then seeing how those diagnoses match up, because it's just not honest to say that somebody has this condition in the same way that someone from another ethnic group or cultural upbringing or background has that condition. It's just not possible. There are some universal themes of self, yes, but a lot of this is definitely related to our growing up, you know? And it's interesting. I didn't expect to speak about this topic, but it's just, you know, what goes on in the mind is so powerful, and it dictates so much of who we are, how we behave, how we are regarded. And as I've gotten older, I've seen that there's definitely an archetype of what people expect from you in your behavior. And when you don't fit it, either you exceed it or you don't meet it, then you get your phrases of being weird and strange and whatever other stigmatizing statements people want to make. But the deviation is what we need to speak about, you know. Remember being in school in maths and we talk about averages, or even when we talk about that bell-shaped curve, and knowing that most people are in the middle, and then you get people at the upper quartile or the lower quartile who are very extreme, and those are the ones that we often see basically cannot live like the normal person, I say in air quotes, normal person. And that either leads to very withdrawn behavior or very violent, explosive behavior, you know. But the people in the middle of the bell curve are just taught to manage it, you know. And it's getting worse with this pandemic. It's way more pronounced. People who probably never thought they had these conditions and are seeing these conditions in their lives, either with their loved ones or themselves. And it's like you have to fight it constantly and stay on top of it. And I notice that when I'm getting into those funks, I fall into a productivity hole, and I'm just like, cool, work, 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 until you annihilate, basically. And unfortunately, that's my medicine. And yep, they get some positive output out of it, but for the most part, I just become exhausted afterwards. I burn out. And I wonder how long it can sustain, you know, for other people. I don't know what their medicalization is, but I guess, and when I say medicalization, I mean like what do we do for ourselves as medicine. So I'm not talking in a traditional medical format. I'm just talking about how we basically treat ourselves. I know some people go straight to recreational substances, alcohol, cigarettes, partying, relationships, whatever. The way to expend that energy, it's essential, because otherwise we essentially explode. But managing it in healthy ways is definitely the hardest part. Coping mechanisms are not always sustainable or healthy, but that's hard to identify in a culture that very much normalizes alcoholism, You know, we speak about the pandemic letting up and lockdown letting up, and the first things being open our bars. This is a reflection on what is normal in the UK, whereas in another country, bars will probably be the last thing to open, you know? And that's what we're not allowing ourselves to admit, even with the opening of retail stores. You know, again, a love for consumerism. Capitalism had does its work. It works its magic, and you still can't get an appointment at the GP, but you can definitely go to Primark and buy something. And it says a lot about what we prioritize, which again informs the cultural understanding of who we are. You know, I try my best not to be judgmental about people. I, of course, am guilty of expressing ableist language and calling people terms like mad and tapped when I see them demonstrate what I consider to be abnormal behavior. But I think that's just a projection of my own self, because I know I engage in abnormal behavior too. Hopefully not harmful. I don't think it's harmful, but it's the idea that if you can attack somebody else for being abnormal, it makes you feel better about yourself. So these are terms I'm trying to eliminate from my lexicon. It's not easy. It's not easy. But every day we learn and unlearn. I was thinking about the fact that, you know, I have a good group of friends who understand that I can't basically deal with like overstimulation. So they try not to message me too much. They give me a lot of space. And sometimes they speak for me in social settings, because a girl gets overwhelmed sometimes. And I thought to myself, oh, they accept me. I had to negotiate that language and say, no, it's not about acceptance, because I'm not asking for permission to exist. Rather, they respect me. They respect who I am. They respect my differences. And if that's what, you know, state apparatus can do in terms of healthcare and psychology and psychiatry, respect that people are different, but understand that that deviation just needs to be accommodated, as opposed to trying to rectify it, again, air quotes, or put them in their place, then perhaps we would have a greater, better world, you know, that celebrates diversity of thought. You know, Greta Thunberg is an autistic girl, and she expresses that with this condition, she was not able to basically dissociate from the importance of climate change. She became obsessed with it. I know how it feels to be obsessed with the theme. I have that, well, I don't want to say problem, but I have that fixation as well. But for her to become a climate change activist, that's directly informed by her condition. You know, someone else might be able to let this go. She hasn't, after years and years. You know, someone was saying how often we see, you know, the typical autistic portrayal as young white boy, brilliant at maths, can't hold a conversation. And of course, that's not the only way the condition manifests. Like, it's very much diverse in its manifestation, but we're not used to seeing it in black women. So that's also something that I really need people to get aware of. And I know there's a girl called Autistically Tyler who has a YouTube account and wrote an article for Black Ballad that I'll put in the description box, and she speaks about her experience with the condition. And she's very transparent about it, and it's definitely something that we need more advocacy for. ADHD as well is another one that we need more advocacy for. There is a lady on Twitter called, well, she uses the acronym FLOTUK, which is First Lady of the UK, and she's been extremely imperative in talking about her diagnosis of ADHD. And because she's got, I think, tens of thousands of followers, so many people have been influenced to get a diagnosis. And now they are feeling much better because of this diagnosis and the treatment they're receiving. And that's exactly what I think influencing should be in terms of helping people identify the differences in themselves. But again, the privileges of having that access to healthcare, particularly during a pandemic, have shown where we fall short and where we raise the bar and where we meet ourselves as people. It's not an easy conversation. I don't really have much else to say about it. It's just some thoughts I wanted to express before I went on further. And yeah, I hope you enjoyed this episode. It was quite all over the place. I was using fillers a lot because I wanted to think before I spoke. And even then, I kept referring to conditions as diseases, and I wish I didn't, but I apologize for that. And I don't want to blather, so I'll end the episode here. Thank you for listening, and I look forward to I look forward to you listening to our next episode in the future.